Little Four Tops. You're doing all right on that bumper music this morning.
All right.
My man Levi Stubbs. I saw them at Wolf Trap up in Washington.
One of the greatest bands of all time and one of my wife's favorites.
Actually, we'll talk music a little later, but Rick is quite a talented musician, too, but I wanted to talk in this first couple of segments about the economy and what this downgrade means. I'm quoting from a Bloomberg news story. Rick Calhoun's our guest. He's first vice president of Cruise and Associates here in Little Rock. He's also the board chairman of the Advance Arkansas Institute. That's a public policy think tank that advances free markets, individual liberty, limited transparent government. Well, I can agree with those things. Anyway, quoting Bloomberg back on Thursday, credit ratings are becoming irrelevant in a bond market where investors still perceive AAA companies from Johnson & Johnson to Microsoft to be a higher risk than recently downgraded U.S. Treasuries. Would you go that far? Would you say credit ratings are becoming irrelevant?
Well, there's not a short answer on that. But, you know, the three primary rating agencies are Moody's, Standard & Poor's, and Fitch. Those are the three ones.
Right.
And as you said earlier, they are private companies.
I was going to say, explain these to us.
Well, that's their job. Their job is to look at a company, a municipality, or a government, a sovereign government's debt, look at their balance sheet, and say, what is the risk that this bond or their debt might default at some point in the future? So then there are basically 10 ratings that are investment grade or better, and so they assign one of those that lets you know what the probability of the risk are. But, you know, the thing that amazes me most about all of this is that the government has forced through regulations banks, money managers, and other money managers and folks like that to abide by the ratings and restrict them greatly as to what they can buy on behalf of a pension fund or a public profit-sharing fund or whatever. But then at the same time, when they were downgraded, they said, well, don't pay any attention to them because it really doesn't matter. Well, of course it does matter. Are the rating agencies perfect? No. Have they gotten it wrong? Yes, many times in the past. But by and large, if anything, this ought to be considered a shot across the bow to Congress, to America, that our debt does matter, our rating does matter, and we need to get our house in order.
Do you see us getting our house in order anytime soon?
Well, that's a real big question.
Yeah, yeah.
Do I see Jesus coming home at some point in the future? But who knows when that's going to be?
I think what most people agreed, most Washington observers on the debt limit, it was really the best deal given the political climate that you could
that's
get
correct.
Now. But as I'm looking at an interview that you gave David Kincaid earlier in the week, and what you said is it's really only the beginning of things to come, and you obviously believe, as I do, that there's a lot of work still to be done at the congressional and at the executive levels in Washington.
Oh, absolutely. You know, they've established this 12-member panel.
Mm-hmm.
Called, what do they call it?
I call it the super committee.
Yeah,
it's
super
special
committee.
Yeah, it's a formal name.
And so these folks, you know, you have three Democrats from the House, you have three Democrats from the Senate, and on the other side, three and three House and Senate Republican. These members have been chosen by the House and Senate leaders on both sides of the aisle because they see those folks as unwavering. Therefore, with 6-6, it's split down the middle. Who's going to make it 7? And the likelihood of a Republican crossing over or Democrat crossing over to give one side or the other a majority really is not likely. So I think we're going to continue to see some gridlock. Ultimately, if they don't have a program or decision by December the 21st, then supposedly automatic cuts of $1.5
trillion. And that's one thing I like about the
deal.
It does put some pressure on them to actually do something.
Right.
And those are across-the-board cuts. So in that sense, again, you use the term shot across the bow. In that sense, is the Standard & Poor's downgrade going to be a useful thing long term, in that it kind of puts a gun to the head of Congress to really follow through and do some follow-up work.
Yes. Long term, it does have tremendous long-term implications. Short term, it really doesn't have that much implications in the marketplace anyway. See, the thing about it is there's always this talk about what's going to happen to U.S. debt, because China holds approximately 30% of our debt. Japan holds another approximately 22%. And the rest of it is held by Great Britain and various European countries. And then, of course, there's a lot of debt held here in this country. So the big question is, well, rates are going to go up if they get downgraded and it costs more to borrow. That's not true, because where else are they going to go? The United States dollar is still the reserve currency of the world. So with the balance of payment being what they are, in other words, we're buying Chinese goods and we're giving them our dollars, what are they going to do with those dollars?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to continue to buy treasury debt. Why? Where else are they going to go? Are they going to buy Greece, Ireland, Portugal? I don't think so. And there's not enough other sovereign debt in the marketplace to make a difference.
I'm quoting from a column yesterday by Holman Jenkins in the Wall Street Journal, where he says, along the lines of what you're talking about, the Standard & Poor's downgrade is likely to pass into business history as a failed gesture and blunder on a large scale, like New Coke, only worse. The unsustainability of the U.S. government's fiscal trajectory was already known. Nothing had changed in the debt ceiling debate except in a positive way for debt holders. In a world in which poor countries are struggling with runaway deficits, America had begun to confront its fiscal challenges legislatively, having already begun to confront them electorally in the 2010 Tea Party elections. What's so disheartening about that? So, again, he's basically saying, look, we all knew where the country was, and we're beginning to confront it now.
We have got to come to terms with the spending that we have. There's a great article in today's paper by Bradley Gitz. I'm not always a fan of Bradley, but
that would be on the Voices page of today's Democrat Gazette.
But it was a very good article
today.
Where
you can find Rex Nelson's columns on Wednesdays, by the way.
Yeah, I love your writing, Rex. I mean, you understand sports and you understand Arkansas. You understand catfish and barbecue like few other people in America.
Those are my subjects. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I brought you in on the business part because that gets over my head. But go ahead. Let's go back to Brad's column.
Basically, the social programs that we have enacted are unsustainable, not only in this country, but in all the other countries. You know, let me be real clear on one point. Yes, I'm a conservative. However, I do believe, like most conservatives, that it is the responsibility of every civilized society to take care of the aged, the infirm, those folks that cannot take care of themselves. And I don't think anybody, any American, disagrees with that principle. However, for the last 70 years, and exponentially much greater in the last 20 and 30 years, we have created an underclass or a subclass of individuals that are totally and completely dependent upon this, who no longer work in many ways. So what we're seeing in Greece, what we're seeing in Great Britain and other countries, we may see in this country, which is the riots, the other things, when the social programs begin to cut back. But presently, they are unsustainable, not only in America, but in Greece and everywhere else.
Do you think that we could be looking at it not only downgrades, you mentioned Moody's and Fitch now from them, but maybe future downgrades from Standard & Poor's, or back to that shot across the bow. Is this what Congress needs to really be serious and to get the fiscal house in order at the federal level?
Well, Congress began to feel the heat and the pressure in 10 and even before.
On election
with
day,
yes.
Yeah.
So this is not new. It is in writing. They have been served, if you will, by papers, by Standard & Poor's that says, hey, it's time to get your house in order, because if you don't, we may do this again.
This upcoming election, again, all elections are important, and that's why I try to vote and urge others do every time. But Barack Obama, obviously, at the top of the Democratic ticket, running for re-election as president of the United States. this huge swing that we saw in Congress with, as we called them, the Tea Party elections of 2010, and we realize now how volatile things are. That pendulum used to swing, you know, maybe every 8 years, maybe every 12 or 16 years. Now we've seen that pendulum at the congressional level certainly can swing on a two-year basis. People say, well, we're mad at these bums. We're going to throw them out. But we are, in my opinion, given the world economic situation, not just the U.S. economic situation, but the world economic situation and the role we play in the global economy coming up on one of the most crucial elections, certainly in our lifetimes.
Well, agreed? I agree. But I think the dynamics have begun to change, because even with the media being what it is today, and there's a good argument maybe that it's too liberal or whatever. But having said that, access to data, access to information is more prevalent than it has ever been. And because of that, I think the average mom and pop, the average farmer, pharmacist, a policeman and politician, the average American gets it today more so than ever before that we are in trouble financially and we must do something about it soon, not later, but soon.
I'm going to put you in a very unusual situation because you're a conservative. You don't run from that, but you're in this hypothetical I'm putting you in. You're in the Obama administration. Given where the president is in the polls right now, given the hand that he has been dealt, given the Republican-controlled House that he now must deal with during the midterm elections, what should President Obama and his administration do from a economic standpoint, a fiscal standpoint, a domestic policy standpoint between now and the election in November of 2012 to try to get him reelected as president of the United States?
You know, when you said, imagine, if you will, that I was in the Obama administration, my first response is, Rex, what have you been drinking on the White House studio?
I just want to challenge you on a Sunday morning, Rick.
But to answer that question, I mean, truly, Barack Obama, President Obama, finds himself between the proverbial rock and a hard place. The left, which is his support base, which controls that aspect of the Democrat Party, if he deserts them and loses them, he may not have the support he needs to get reelected, because he's already begun to lose the support of the moderates in the middle, as they say, because they have been those folks that voted for hope and change and not necessarily for leftist policy. Mm-hmm. Those people that voted for hope and change are disappointed. And so they've already begun to leave him in droves, and you see the recent numbers. So ideally, he has to placate the left. He has to placate his power base. But at the same time, he needs to drift toward the middle like our friend Bill Clinton did.
Who very successfully did that, we might note, after the 94 midterm elections when Democrats took
the
beating.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, Brother Bill, as we love to say here in Arkansas,
He's good.
He's good. It doesn't matter what you think about him one way or the other, but you got to
politically,
admit, he is politically the best there ever was.
Oh, absolutely.
So
I mean, Hillary Care was such a failure. What's he come back? He comes back and does welfare reform, which Republicans hop on board with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he was the master at triangulation. I'm not sure President Obama knows what that is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I tend to agree with you there. On the other hand, though, at least so far, there's nobody that Republicans really seem to be getting excited about. Romney's kind of a tepid front runner. Bachman wins Iowa straw poll yesterday, but I don't think she can play on a national stage long term. You may disagree. We'll get into that after this. Rick Perry's now in the race from neighboring Texas. So where does that go? And Tim Pawlenty is out. You may not have realized he was in. That was his problem. I realized he was in from Minnesota.
Perry's got a big bus. I've got some great, great Perry stories, too.
All right. We'll come back. We'll talk about Rick Perry. Rick Calhoun from Cruz & Associates, our guest on the Sunday Buzz. Well, they couldn't.